Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Hello and welcome back, or howdy, folks. We are going to be getting into the Monroe Doctrine. And one of the things I was thinking about regarding the Missouri Compromise is I need to actually look at how each of the states prior to the Missouri Compromise were admitted into the Union. Because I believe, as we witnessed, as I read to you, that there was a creep in overreach by the federal government. I believe that we will probably see very similar creeping incrementally. May not have started with Kentucky and Virginia, but I can tell you that that is a tendency, that is a tendency of government. Government slowly, you know, it's like the boiling of the frog. They slowly and incrementally increase their power, they incrementally increase their control, and they do it so that they can sell it to you that, oh, you're going to be better off. You know, you're not going to have to worry about carrying a gun because we're going to create a police force that is going to make you safe. You'll never have to worry again about having to protect your family and protect your home. That's our job now. When actually, that's a lie. It's not government's job to protect your family and protect your home. It's government's job to make sure that you have the ability to protect yourself. You have a right to protecting yourself, your property. And when we talk about property, that goes back to the concept of intellectual property. That goes to the essence of our most precious property, our conscience. I had an interesting discussion with a member of the Constitution Party that left the party because there were members of the party that were not purists in one very specific thing. And that purism was the abortion issue. And, you know, it was like government should compel and government should have full control that there should never ever be an allowance for an abortion. Now, I do understand the sanctity of life, and I am anti-abortion, but I am not pro-compulsion. I am not pro-letting government, especially a government that has no power or no delegated power over that. And this is where I think this argument gets lost. Lost in the weeds, not lost as in a win or lose situation. I believe the argument gets lost because we look at the federal government as something that is every aspect of our lives, and we look at the U.S. Constitution as the law that governs every aspect of our lives, and that is not true. The U.S. Constitution is the law that creates a general government. It delegates very specific roles, responsibilities, and powers and restrictions upon that general government. It wasn't until the 14th Amendment that there were restrictions. Actually, there were restrictions placed upon the states within that Constitution. And the state government saw that those were good restrictions. No bills of attainder, ex post facto laws, and so forth. So when we're looking at and talking about, you know, the central government having the ability to dictate whether an abortion is okay or not, that's wrong, and this is where we all have to unite. I don't care where you stand. If you want to create a theology, with, you know, that's imaginary. There's no reality to a theocracy ever being, you know, implemented here in America. There's no founding of that. There is a right of conscience, and there is a right of dissent. And so when states want to start choosing, you know, what they want to support, that's within the state's rights, if it is within the state constitution. But if the U.S. Constitution, and this is where we all have to agree, we can't lose this over the issue because there are people that say, I'm willing to accept this. As a matter of fact, this goes straight down to my position that the Constitution Party shouldn't have any policies. You know, it's nice, but they should remove any of the morality placements or anything like that within their strategy. Their strategy should be all about compliance to the Constitution. You know, you can be whatever you want to be, but if you want the government to, you know, have a new role, responsibility, and power, I'll let you argue that. And the process isn't by getting Congress to usurp the power. The process is getting Congress to write an amendment, put it out to the states to argue. Because I'm going to tell you, we would save a lot of time if we just stayed within that framework. And why? Because if we stay within the framework, then people would quickly realize that there's just no way we're going, you know, there will be ebb and flow of the crisis of the day. And as a matter of fact, we had a great circumstance in America where they manufactured, and I'm going to say manufactured, they manipulated a crisis of drinking to where they said the federal government needed to ban and outlaw hard liquor. And so they created an amendment, and it was ratified. Well, maybe it wasn't constitutionally ratified. I don't know. We'd have to do the audit. But bottom line, it didn't take long for the nation to realize that you can't compel behavior. That's not for the central government to do. That's for the states to do. Let the states dictate and manage that. So when we look at, you know, these issues and why people, you know, want to draw this moral high ground for themselves, I think that they've really, you know, what they, you know, sometimes you can skew a picture to make it look like you're above something, but all you've done is just distorted your field of view, when in reality you're still in the low ground, you're still in the valley. You are not in the high ground when you start taking the position of compulsion and taking away the liberty of others. You know, everybody has the liberty to do good or do bad. And if you do bad, then you need to live with the consequences of that. Now, in society, at the state level, you got to remember the federal government has no jurisdiction over crime other than those few things that we've identified for you. What are those few things? Counterfeiting. I always have to think about that word. Counterfeiting, treason, crimes committed on the high seas, and crimes committed against the laws of nations. And there's probably one other crime out there. But they don't have any jurisdiction over murder. They don't have any jurisdiction over kidnapping, over shoplifting, over drugs, drug use, any of those types of things. They have no jurisdiction over those things. This is strictly, those types of crimes are left to the state's discretion. So anyway, whether you like it or not, our constitutional system is awesome, because it keeps the federal government out of the knickers of the states if we're in compliance. And you would think that this constitutional party, you know, person that's left, and these people that leave the Constitution Party, you'd think that they'd understand that. But they just get caught up in the nuances and the differences of the moral issues. And I'm just telling you, the moral issues do not belong within the Constitution Party. And I say that because the fact of the focus needs to be on what is constitutional and what isn't constitutional. And to make something constitutional requires the states. To enforce constitutional compliance requires the states. So I'm hoping that this all starts to make sense to people. But anyway, as you know, the show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence of where we've come from, what we're doing, and where we're going. We're actually going to be hitting on some revisionist history stuff. Maybe not get it into this actual episode, but what we're going to do is we're going to cover Madison's letter to John G. Jackson, and we're also going to be covering the Monroe Doctrine. And I think dovetailed with the Monroe Doctrine spurred this concept of manifest destiny. And I believe that there was a spirit to manifest destiny in America that was divine, but I believe the revisionists, and I'm going to prove to you how the revisionists are trying to paint America as a country that was established on the principles of racism. And really, the fact is, Britain created these colonies. Britain created the foundation and the direction of this nation. And Thomas Jefferson clearly identified in the Declaration of Independence that it was Britain who instituted this type of slavery so that they would basically straddle us into what would be considered a very bipolar issue of black and white down the road. Now, whether they were that intelligent to understand what was going to happen and how it would play out, I don't think so. But there's no doubt in my mind Satan knew, because Satan has taken down all sorts of societies and all sorts of countries. I mean, come on. He's been around a long time. I mean, the Rolling Stones song just is playing loudly in my ears, Sympathy for the Devil. This guy has brought down all these different societies. Anyway, when we come back, we'll get into our final comments, obligatory comments, and move forward into the Monroe Doctrine.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just say this. We've got our comment line, 425-270-5416, like I just said, but we want you to be able to contact us not within the, you know, that really tight one-hour window. And what this does is it allows me to kind of allow for, because we want to make sure we get content in and we get through this content and kind of set up the stage and so forth. So dealing with phone calls and having the conversations, we want to be able to do it on your terms as well as our terms. And I think it's a symbiotic relationship that we're creating here, because as I try to go through content, when I'm reading the ratification base, when I'm reading this letter from Madison to John G. Jackson, you know, I could easily be interrupted and be, you know, and then it's hard for you down the road when you're playing a podcast to say, wow, I thought we were getting into this and then we didn't get into it. We had to wait for, and it could take weeks to do that. And so what we do is when you call and leave a comment, when we have a marketing or when we have a break in between our content, we will actually play your comments. We'll let you know, as a matter of fact, if you give us contact information, we'll say, hey, we're going to be playing your comment today. So that way you can listen. And if you don't like the response, then you can call us back and maybe we'll actually do an interview. Or maybe if you like it, then you go, hey, that's awesome, and share that with your friends. Anywho, we do want to have a symbiotic relationship with all patriots as we start, you know, engaging at the state level in driving the state to take over this unconstitutional tyranny that has literally taken over our lives. You know, this these maskings, this whole concept of stealing our liberties by governors, that was all planned at a grand high level of an international level, as well as at the top level of the national level of like CDC and these folks who are a part of the globalist agenda. Unfortunately, Trump, I'll just say, as I've said to other people, I don't think Trump knew who he could trust, and he kept on trusting the wrong people. And I think the people that he trusted to tell him who were good people were the wrong people. I think I look forward to the day, because if I'm right, then this will just prove this, that the day will come when we'll actually see a historical biography on Trump and his presidency. And how he basically says, you know, I didn't have any person. I had all of these people I thought I could trust, and come to find out I couldn't trust any of them because they were all a part of the deep state. Anyway, as you know, we've got a listener drive. We definitely are begging, we're pleading to help get this message out. If you want to see actual changes, the message has to get out. The people need to know where to focus their energy. Right now, people are just running around because we've been programmed to run around like idiots and to be consumers of their news cycle. We've got to break that. We've got to start focusing on what and how to get organized. And this is why I tell you, get involved with the Constitution Party and get involved with the National Liberty Alliance. You know, the interesting thing, and I'm going to say this right now, because right now the National Liberty Alliance does not charge a penny for you to be a member, for you to get involved at all. I'm trying to get the leadership of the organization to actually start charging, because if they charged $1 or $2 a month, you know, $12 a year, $24, maybe $20 a year if you buy by the year, $2 a month, you know, give you a discount, something like that. But $20 a year is nothing. And that money can actually go to, you know, instead of pocketing and putting that money in people's pockets, that money could actually go to actually help fund very specific things that would be in the strategic interest of reclaiming the republic. And so I just think it's a very powerful thing. And you can't, in some ways, you can't get a venue for people to come and for people to, you know, experience the National Liberty Alliance. Let's say, you know, like G. Edward Griffin has the Need to Know News, and he also has this Red Pill Expo. You know, if the National Liberty Alliance, you know, put that money into an event, not necessarily to pay people, but for people to come and just to cover their cost, so that people can come and get involved, and maybe not a national event, but a regional event, something that would be in the four corners of the United States or something like that, to where people, or maybe six, you know, the northeastern, southeastern, central, north, south central, you know, I guess that's a bad area of LA. But my point is that if they had these events where people could actually come and learn about the fundamentals of what we need to do, this would be very powerful, because getting people out and involved is sometimes is the first step. And when you tell somebody, hey, we want you to listen to this radio station, it'll heal your paradigm. It reminds me of the old evangelicals where, you know, they would say, put your hand on the radio, we're going to heal you. I'm sorry. Again, sometimes I do think I'm the only one that thinks I'm funny. At least that's what my mother and my wife say. But anyway, we're here to help. We're here to, you know, actually solve problems, and we're not from the government. And so anyway, thank you for listening. And we hope that you start considering, you know, expanding this message to all of your like-minded friends. Anyway, let me get into this letter from Madison to John G. Jackson. And the background of this is very, very important. So in December 27th, 1821, Madison actually wrote a letter and a response to Mr. John G. Jackson, who was begging Madison for a copy of his notes on the Constitutional Convention. Why? Why did he want this? It wasn't something for him. And as a matter of fact, he was asked because he had a family. He wasn't a direct relation. I think he was an off relationship of Dolly Madison, James's wife. And so John G. Jackson, you know, knew how to get a hold of Madison. And so he was asked, you know, hey, let's get these notes from him so that we can actually start understanding, because there were a lot of people that started recognizing in 1821 what just happened, the Missouri Compromise, right? So the Missouri Compromise just happened, and there happened to be a upswell by a lot of very concerned patriots at the time that the government wasn't in compliance to the Constitution, and they wanted to have a better understanding so that they could make the appropriate corrections necessary. Not to discourage James Monroe, but I don't think James Monroe was in the same league with Madison and or Jefferson. I think he was the right man for the time, because what he did give us in the Monroe Doctrine was profound, because it actually proved that America was to be a beacon to the world of liberty, that we weren't going to take a stand. I want you to be very clear so that you understand that the revisionists were trying to make you think that this was all about racism when it was all about liberty. And I've said this time and time again, when you read the Constitution, there's no doubt in my mind it was not about white man's way of living. It was about the way of living that is innate to all human beings. Everybody wants to be able to freely choose for themselves what religion they want to practice. Everybody wants to choose the foods that they want to eat, the things that they want to do. And as long as they can stay within the societal mores and the cultural laws and those types of things, then everything is great. Society thrives. As a matter of fact, I will go to, and forgive me, because it just dawned on me that this would probably be very appropriate for me to read, and it would basically tell you, let me see here, yes, right here. So this is, I cite myself in my first book, but this is a little quip I have that talks about the power of liberty and the fundamental elements that are necessary for this power to come forth. Civil society, this is a quote, civil society is wholly dependent upon the symbiosis between the fundamental principles of liberty, Those principles being free agency, responsibility, and accountability. When these principles are balanced and in harmony with the individual citizens, liberty can then act as a catalyst in elevating synergy within the community and society. These synergies will lead to stronger spiritual well-being, greater productivity, improved health, and the development of wealth. It's only when we're living with riotous living, debauchery, and, you know, seeking the thrill of the moment that we decay liberty and we decay our society. And if you understand natural law, that's why we kind of go through natural law. If you understand it, natural law, when you're doing things that are contrary to the good of society, it is a violation of natural law. Anyway, we will be right back with Madison's letter right after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so why did I just read that citation from myself? Because the reality of what liberty does and what this Constitution does is it makes liberty the bedrock of society when the Constitution is complied to. And so in so doing, why would anybody think that the people of China, the people of around the world, would not want to have and enjoy the blessings of liberty instead of being controlled and manipulated by the few elite that run those countries, that run the world, or at least they're trying to get to the point where they have full control over the world. But they're almost there. And so I want you to understand that the revisionists are trying to make the world global solution to global governance, because the global governance was, you know, a utopian concept. I'm just telling you, if you look throughout Dante and a lot of the different writings of utopianism, you'll find that this concept of global governance and liberty, that everybody could, you know, thrive, because people, that's innate within everybody. As a matter of fact, Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, forgive me for going into this, and if we have to, you know, take this content longer, I apologize. But Adam Smith pointed out that it was innate inside every person that they wanted to improve the lot of their children. So they worked hard so that their children could have a better life than they did. This is innate. This is not just something that is a white person paradigm. Every society, every human being has that, especially those who become, you know, a part of the nucleus of society. In other words, those who become or extend that family. In other words, there are some that start perverting this because they're repulsed by the family. They get perverted and they think that the family's bad, when the family is the building block of society, and it creates the civility, because it's only those who are in harmony in a family that seek to harmonize with the other families. It's those people that reject that that innate programming in man that actually are responsible for perverting that, to destroy that building block. And so, I mean, when you put that into aspects of Christianity and the gospel, you know, you can have a lot of fun, you know, building upon all of these premises. But the point is, innate within everybody is that desire to be able to have the freedom to choose where they will live and how many kids they will have and what they're going to do. I mean, even the perverts that reject and want to do what they want to do, that is all too also based on liberty. They too want to enjoy liberty to say and spew the foul things that they want to say. There's not a person that can be honest and say, liberty is bad, take it away from me, tell me what I got to say, make me do whatever it is that's best for me. There's not one person out there that says that. So, as we started recognizing, or as these people that were living during this time of the 1820s, you know, how long had they been using this Constitution? Well, that's over 20 years. Well, as the story gets told around the circle, things start changing. If you've ever done that experiment, a social experiment where somebody has, or they read something that was handed to them, and they actually read that to the next person. And the next person, you know, okay, then they repeat that. And then the next person repeats that, and it goes around the circle. And what you do is you don't go to the first person that read it. You go, is this what you heard? And that person will say, yeah. And so then you know that it at least started in a pure form from one mouth to the ear. And then you can see how slowly it got perverted and changed into meaning something. And because somebody along the line decided to make those changes, or whether it was a conscious thing or whether they just couldn't keep up, so they had to fill in the blanks. There are those, because yours truly, I remember when I was a kid, I heard that we did this, you know, I've seen this done a couple of times, and I had fun with it. And I actually completely changed what I had heard to what I told somebody else. And so there's people that will do that. I did it for fun. But the reality is that that's what happens, whether it be for fun or by design to manipulate people. The truth always changes. And so I truly believe that the Constitution, when one looks at it, it is the solution for global governance. If you want to get rid of wars and you want to get rid of all the world problems, then the Constitution is the form of government that needs to go from sea to shining sea, period. Anyway, so they wanted to understand this Constitution better because they felt and they knew that there were some problems with how government and the federal government was behaving. Got to remember, again, that the Missouri Compromise just got passed, and now states were being forced into slavery. I'm telling you, this didn't go over well. So from Montpelier, on December 27, 1821, Madison states, with respect to that portion of the mass which contains the voluminous proceedings of the convention, it has always, he's talking about his notes, it has always been my intention that they should some day or other see the light. But I have always felt at the same time the delicacy attending such a use of them, especially at an early season. In general, I have learned to the expediency of letting the publication be a posthumous one. In other words, he was planning on going to his death before those notes on the convention would come out. And his plan was actually to bequeath those to Dolly Madison, so that this would help her pay for, you know, her living longer, because she was younger, and he wanted to be able to have, you know, leave her an estate that would take care of her. The result of my latest reflections on the subject I cannot more conveniently explain than by the enclosed extract from the letter one confidentially written since the appearance of the proceedings of the convention, as taken from the notes of Chief Justice. Of this work I have not yet seen a copy. From the scraps thrown into the newspaper, I cannot doubt that the prejudices of the author guided his pen. Doesn't that always happen? And that he has committed egregious errors, at least, in relation to others as well as myself. The most of us carried into the convention a profound impression produced by the experienced inadequacy of the old confederation, and by the monitory examples of all similar ones, ancient and modern, as to the necessity of binding the states together by a strong constitution is certain. The necessity of such a constitution was enforced by the gross and disreputable inequalities which had been prominent in the internal administrations of most of the states. Nor was the recent and alarming insurrection headed by the Shays in Massachusetts without a very sensible effect on the publication in mind. Such indeed was the aspect of things that in all eyes of the best friends of liberty, a crisis had arrived which was to decide whether the amend or the beginning or the end of the society, of the American experiment, was to be blessing the world or to blast forever the hopes which the Republican cause had inspired. And that was not to be overlooked, the disposition to give to a new system all the vigor consistent with Republican principles. Now, Republican principles, what does that mean? That means a representative government, so that the people were not a democracy. They would choose who would represent them. It would be a constitutional government, where the Constitution would be very specific of the delegated powers and enumerated, so that these representatives would be constrained by those very specific powers. And thirdly, that the rule of law, that the fundamental laws themselves were the most paramount, that you could not violate the Constitution and the laws that were in pursuit to the Constitution. And my friends, this was the brilliance of what the Lord inspired. Moving on, consistent with the Republican principles, was not a little stimulated by backwardness in some quarters towards a convention for the purpose, which was ascribed to a secret dislike to popular government, and a hope that delay would bring it more into disgrace and pave the way to form a government more congenial with monarchical and aristocratical predilections. In other words, basically what he was saying is that there was these people in America that actually wanted to see the Constitution fail. And so I'm going to reread this when we come back so you can kind of garner this, because Madison was very astute. He was spot on in recognizing Hamilton and some of these other nefarious people. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me reread this so that you can kind of understand what he's saying at a micro perspective, or a macro, I mean, the overview of, you know, what drove this constitutional convention and how there were people that were literally bystanders as this thing moved forward with this new constitutional government, waiting to basically for its demise to occur so that they could actually take in or step in and create a monarchical government, or at least an aristocratical type of government. Anyway, so he says, the necessity of such a constitution was enforced by the gross and disreputable inequities which had been prominent in the internal administrations of most states. Nor was the recent and alarming insurrection headed by the Shays in Massachusetts without a very sensible effect on its publication in mind. In other words, his very particular notes, he was thinking, okay, so, you know, we need to go down this path of creating this constitutional government. And such indeed was the aspect of things that in all the eyes of all the best friends of liberty, a crisis had arrived which was to decide whether the American experiment was to be a blessing to the world or to blast forever the hopes which the Republican cause had inspired. And that what is not to be overlooked, the disposition to the new given system or What is not to be overlooked, the disposition to give a new system all the vigor consistent with Republican principles, was not a little stimulated by a backwardness in some quarters towards a convention for the purpose, which was ascribed to a secret dislike to popular government, and a hope that delay would bring it more into disgrace. In other words, by this Republican form of government and the delay of, you know, not fixing the Articles of Confederation would bring it more into disgrace and pave the way for a form of government more congenial to a monarchical and or aristocratic, why do I have a problem with this, aristocratical predilections. So what we want to basically point out here, my friends, and what I think is really important, is he was actually seeing how those dark forces were, as he calls them, in the backward quarters. They were trying to let America basically fail so that we could have an American monarchy. And what would have ended up happening had that happened, because look at the monarchies of the world today. Who is the principal monarch in the world? It is the Queen of England. And so there are the Prince of Wales. If you look, go do a research of how many monarchs exist in the world today. I think you're going to find 13. There's maybe something biblical to that. Okay? And so, or 14. Anyway, what was about to happen if America would have failed in fixing the Articles of Confederation was America would have been a sub-kingdom of Britain. And so because the descendants of America were of the lineage of Britain, and that marriage would have ended up occurring, or I should say, gravitating towards that because of the lineage. Anyway, he moves on and says, this view of the crisis made it natural for many in the convention to lean more than was perhaps in strictness warranted by a proper distinction between causes temporary, as to some of them doubtless were, and causes permanently inherent in popular frames of government. It is true also, as to has been sometimes suggested, that the course of decisions in the convention were so much dependent on compromise. The patrons of different opinions often set out on negotiating grounds more remote than each other than the real opinions of either were from the point at which they finally met. For myself, having the first moment of maturing a political opinion down to the present one never ceased to be a votary of principle of self-government. I was among those most anxious to rescue it from the danger which seemed to threaten it. Interesting, right? And actually, if you understand what Madison was doing in all of his efforts in getting George Washington aboard, on board with this whole process, because that was the key to the success, and he knew that. And so that's why he was probably the most instrumental person in making this Constitution, you know, even happen, this Constitutional Convention. And with that view, was willing to give to a government resting on that foundation as much energy as would ensure the requisite stability and efficacy. It is possible that some instances this consideration may have been allowed a weight greater than subsequent reflection within the convention, or the actual operation of the government would sanction. It may be remarked also that it sometimes happened that opinions as to the particular modification or a particular power of the government had a conditional reference to others which combined therewith would vary the character of the whole. Now this is the key right here. But whatever might have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at its time of its ratification. Do you understand what he just said? This is the critical part, my friends. What he basically said was, as these states came into this compact and came into this agreement in creating this general government through this compact, that what was important, what was paramount, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification. He wasn't. So he's pointing to the fact that his notes on the convention were really irrelevant in trying to understand what the Constitution really means. What is important is the ratification debates as they spell out how this line was defined and how that line was defined. This is why he says to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification. Every state in the Union had to ratify it. Now, it wasn't Delaware's fault, the people of Delaware, that their delegates just slam dunked this and didn't even debate it. That was truly unfortunate because I think the nation would have been far better off had Delaware and a few of the other states actually had a vigorous discussion as all of the states, because I'm going to tell you that there would have been a unanimous chorus of the speaking towards a very limited general government and enumerated powers, as you read in all of those states that actually did debate this. The states that failed to debate this saw no threat in this new government as they saw in the British government, because they, as this was debated in the Constitutional Convention, it was clear that this was a very limited and defined government, and that's how it was even defined during the ratification debates. No one, so moving on, I'll just reread this, but whatever might have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification. No one felt this obligation more than I have done, and there are few, perhaps those, perhaps whose ultimate and deliberate opinions on the merits of the Constitution accord in a greater degree with that obligation. The departures from the true and fair construction of the instrument have always given me pain and always experienced my opposition when called for. The attempts in the outset of government to defeat those safe, if not necessary, and those politic, if not obligatory, amendments introduced in conformity to the known desires of the body of the people and to the pledges of many, particularly myself, when vindicating the recommending of the Constitution, was an occurrence not only a little ominous, and it was soon followed by indications of political tenets and by rules, or rather the abandonment of all rules of expounding it, which were capable of transforming it into something very different from its legitimate character as the offspring of the world will, or of the national will. I'm sorry. I wish I could say that constructive innovations had altogether ceased. Whether the Constitution, as it is, has divided the powers of government between the states in their separate and in their united capacities, tends to be an oppressive aggrandizement of the general government, or to an anarchical independence of the state governments, is a problem which time alone can absolutely determine. It is much to be wished that the division as it exists, or as it may be with the regular sanction of the people, may effectually guard against both extremes. But it cannot be doubted that an accumulation of all power in the general government would as naturally lead to the dangerous accumulation in the executive hands as the resumption of all power by the states would end in the calamities incident to the contiguous and revival sovereigns, to say nothing in its effect in lessening the security of sound principles of the administration within each of them. Anyway, he goes on to talk, and we'll cover the last part of this in our next episode. I hope you understand. This man was brilliant, and he understood what they had. And I want to address some of the things he says here. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.